You're listening to episode 11 of Cultivating the Lovely, the podcast. Welcome to Cultivating the Lovely, the podcast. This is the podcast all about pouring the labor, care, and study into the roles that God has given us as wives, moms, women, and His children. It is meant to inspire us to be living with passion, intention, beauty, and delight in the everyday moments right where we're at. I'm your hostess, Mackenzie Monroe from boldturquoise.com and cultivatingthelovely.com and the Cultivating the Lovely Morning Show on Periscope. I am so, so excited to be bringing you today an interview with Sally and Sarah Clarkson. Now, if any of you have followed me for any length of time, you know that I love me some Sally. I have been reading her books for years and was absolutely delighted to get to have her and her daughter on my podcast to promote their brand new book, The Life-Giving Home, that just came out this week. It has a companion guide that goes along with it, and it's all about really cultivating that loveliness in our homes. Go figure. It is just a wonderful, wonderful fit for our community, and I think that you all are really going to enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, here is Sally and Sarah. Welcome, Sally and Sarah. I am so excited to have you guys here with me today.
Oh, we are thrilled to be with you.
It's a delight to be here.
Well, why don't you let my readers know who you are? I would have a hard time believing they wouldn't know who you are if they've listened to me at all. But why don't you go ahead and give a little introduction?
Okay, great. I am Sally, and I have four children who are all adults at this point. But many years ago, I was a missionary in Eastern Europe, and I spent years in discipleship. And when I finally had my first child, I thought, oh my goodness, I don't even know what to do. But I had this deep feeling in my heart that the implications of what I'd creating a home for my children and teaching them about their faith in God would have eternal implications. So I began to study scripture and write books and do mom's conferences and learned so much, but felt so lonely over my years as a mom that I decided that when my children grew up and I had a little bit more time, that I wanted to spend the rest of my life encouraging and inspiring and helping moms to not feel alone in this great call of motherhood.
And I'm Sarah Clarkson, and I am currently a student at Oxford studying theology. I like to tell people I took a lot of gap years off in between before I decided what I actually wanted to study. But I spent those years doing a lot of writing on children's literature and story and doing some devotional writing for young women. And so I think I've always just been interested in the intersection of faith and imagination and just, I think, how faith is enfleshed, whether that's in story or in the beauty of home, or I think that's what I've explored in my writing. But yeah, I am based in Oxford now, and I'm here with my mom for a short break.
Well, it's so good to have you guys. You can definitely tell that you've been spending some time in England, Sarah. The accent is coming through. I love it.
Oh, how funny.
Yeah. So this book, as a community, this last year on Periscope in 2015, we read Own Your Life.
And how fun.
Yes, it was so amazing, and everybody just thought it was life-changing. I read the book, I think, three times in 2015. And
that makes you and me best friends.
Yes. Oh, I love to hear that. You have no idea. Everything that I felt like, though, after reading that book, I was going, this was amazing and wonderful, but now I want, like, the practicality of how to make this happen and what this looks like on a deeper level. And then you announced you were coming out with The Life-Giving Home. I was like, oh, Sally, bless your heart, because that is exactly what I needed. And so can you tell people a little bit about how this book started and kind of where it came from and how it's evolved over the years? Because I know it took you guys kind of a long time to write.
Well, we had been best friends for our whole lives. It's fun to have a first child. And I told all of my children that I would send them to counseling for free if if they ever needed it for all the experiment and things I use them to study and learn about. But I began to realize, especially as a single woman when I was a missionary in Eastern Europe, that I didn't have a place to go where I felt safe and loved and affirmed and encouraged and I had had a great mom in that way. She really loved focusing on building a great home for us. But I realized that what I needed in a home, too, was a spiritual component that undergirded my faith, my heart, my emotions, and so on and so forth. So when I had Sarah, I was almost 31, and I had never changed a diaper, had never babysat. I was in a family with all boys.
Wow.
And the youngest. But I was holding her, having spent many years in discipleship overseas in missions, and I thought, oh my goodness, this little baby has implications for eternity, her heart, her soul, her mind, and how can I shape a place that is kind of a sanctuary for life? Or I really wanted it to be, in a sense, an outpost, the headquarters for all that was good and beautiful. And so that's kind of when my dream about home began. I realized that I wanted my children to be rooted in all that Christ was in an incarnated way, the feast, the traditions, and so on. But over the years, as I started implementing different traditions and rhythms and routines and would read other books, my passion for it grew. And I think Sarah, being my best friend for all these years, by the time she was almost 20, she had a passion for it. And you'll hear more from her today about how that's grown since she's been overseas. But we went away to this great little place, and the story is about it in the book.
Yes.
But finally, we went to this wonderful little town, Asheville, North Carolina, that had great coffee shops and tea shops and bookstores and trails to walk and the Biltmore to see as a wonderful historical home of the Vanderbilts. And we envisioned writing this book together. And there's a funny story in the book about what literally happened to us.
It's an amazing that was story. Everybody has to get the book just to read that story.
Well, it really was funny because we, I won't give away the story right now, but we had reserved with some points a little hotel room that actually had a kitchenette so we could have our strong tea and coffee to write this inspiring book. And it was the most uninspiring place, and you can read about it. And then I really believed we were divinely led to this wonderful place that was a contrast, that was life-giving and soul-filling and beautiful, and it kind of embraced you and hugged you as you walked up the steps, and it supported our ideals in terms of home. And so we began writing it then, and I think that was over 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And other book contracts came up, and other conferences, and Sarah had spent her time in lots of leadership and discipleship things. And so how do you remember it from then, Sarah?
Well, I think that, I mean, obviously for me growing up in a home like ours, as I was watching my mom create it, I think I always had this value for what home could be. But of course, it's something that you take for granted when you're a child. You just grow up in the atmosphere of it, and you love it. And I think that, yeah, we definitely began dreaming about writing this book over 10 years ago on that particular trip, which was great fun. And we kind of returned to, we return, I think, fairly, I mean, every year if we could, to Asheville, and would continue to write and dream about it. But
yeah.
I think the catalyst for writing the book came in the last couple of years. I think for me, I've done a lot of overseas travel and living and just living with students and living in different places. And I've just realized more and more, both for myself and then, but far more for a lot of the people I've encountered, how difficult it is to create home again when you're starting from scratch. And mm-hmm. But yet how much of a need is for home. And I live in Oxford, and there's just people from all over the world, and everyone is coming to a new place, and you're not known, and you're looking for a place to belong. And I think my passion for this book has grown as I've realized it has to be created again and again, that home is something that you give as a gift. I received as a child, it was a gift given to me. And then it was something that needed to be created once more in the place I was, that I needed to create it in my little student room, in my little, and just, once having begun that process of creation, what was made possible through it, the friendships, the accountability, the support, the beauty, I just really believe more and more, especially as I'm studying theology. It's been really fun to study the incarnation and write about home at the same time, because you begin to realize how much faith and love are really enfleshed in the way that you live, in the way that you give, in the way you relate to people. And so I think for me, I think all those themes kind of came together and kind of became the catalyst for actually writing the book.
Yeah, I think that has been one of the most interesting things about this book is hearing, for one, both of your voices as mother and daughter. It was kind of interesting to come to. You guys have very different voices and are coming from different places, and you can tell that you are studying theology, Sarah, and that so comes through. And I love that not only is this book applicable to moms, having Sally in there and having done it, but you really make it applicable to anyone, because it's this underwriting faith reason for creating home. Mm. And that makes it so much deeper and so much more meaningful. And I think we all kind of have this idea that home is important, but your book really points out why, and those deeper reasons of, like, God made us for home. And so that is one of the things that has been most exciting and I think fulfilling about reading this book, is, wow, this is like a holy task that we're undertaking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think too, especially in this time where we're being inundated with media from all over the world about ISIS and about catastrophes and about shootings, and we need a sanctuary for life, a laboratory, so to speak, where we can remember the goodness of God and that He is faithful, and that our faith matters, and that we can celebrate innocence in our home and give hope to those who come here. And a place like that doesn't just happen. It needs somebody to be a conductor of the life and the beauty and the messages. And I think all of us need that safe, sustaining, encouraging, filling up place that will send us then back into the world to be able to fight the battles that the world has to present to us every day.
And I would add to that, too. I think that it's really easy to become caught up in a very kind of cognitive, rational spirituality, where we think if we know all the right things, that that will enable us to live a right life. But I think that Scripture is just full of the idea that we taste and see the goodness of God, and that we're not merely minds, who need to act in a good or moral way. We need to taste and touch goodness. We're bodies and souls and emotions, and that we are meant to be rooted and planted in love. And I think that that's why it is that important idea that home is not just for one kind of person, or, you know, if you have a family or if you have a big house. It's the idea that everyone was made to belong. And it's from that belonging and that love that we are able to live rooted lives in which we can be rooted in Christ, know Him, and give to others. And I just think it's important to regain a vision for that for all people.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I love that you make this for everybody, because honestly, sometimes I think of the Clarksons and I picture, like, musical theater, like you guys just, like, dance around singing to each other. Like, was this real? But then I noticed you guys said in the book that you have, like, a loud family, which so surprised me. And I recently read a book by Jen Hatmaker, and she was talking about how families are either sweet or spicy, and I have a spicy family. And so there was some reservation kind of coming into the book, like, is a life-giving home for a spicy family? Like, is this even possible?
Oh, my goodness.
But then I heard you mention that it was kind of loud in your house. So can you talk about that?
Well, I think that, every family has a different puzzle and a different story to tell. And so I don't think that we have to feel pressure to be house beautiful or home beautiful or whatever we think someone else is. But our particular mix is that my husband Clay and I are both, if you did Myers-Briggs,
yes,
we are both 1%ers. We are, in other words, in the whole United States, only 1% of the people are half as idealistic as we are. And so he is, but he is a thinker on the scale. I mean, he hardly even scored 1 point in the area of feelings or relationship.
Wow.
And I am extremely relationship oriented. And I would spin around the house loving the kids and encouraging them and saying, don't fuss, and I don't like conflict. And Clay and I would sit at the dinner table at night, and we would discuss, he'd bring home ideas and we would read things, and I would say, what did you read today for Daddy? And so I never knew that we were building such a, foundational environment. I have 2 introverts and 2 extroverts for kids. But every night at the dinner table, these big issues, and everyone comes home opinionated, and the books they've been reading, the movies they've been watching, and why do Christians act this way? And it's just, there's never a dull moment, and everyone wants to be sure to be heard. And so we created this very verbal, musical, feasting, reading, discussing environment. You know, I didn't know if they were paying attention, and evidently they were.
That's helpful.
But yeah, I wouldn't say that, you know, I don't want to give you the wrong impression, but we're just kind of we really are what we write about. And, you know, none of us are very practical except for Clay. But we're all extremely idealistic, passionate, inspired, going to take the world by storm. So that doesn't land to a vanilla, very plain taste sort of family. We are definitely always in the midst of interaction in our home.
Well, that
is that how you'd say it?
That is encouraging for those of us with spicy families that this is for everybody, not just, you know, Mary Poppins.
Yeah, no. There you go. No, Mary Poppins here.
Yeah.
We kind of wish she would show up and clean the house once in a while, but it hasn't ever happened.
Okay, I
feel like one thing I need to add to this is that our kids, we have several kids that truly are have mental illness issues. I mean by that, they really are OCD, like clinically OCD, mm-hmm. and their component. And then when you add to that, you know, Nathan and I are actually writing a book about this, but add to that ADD, ODD, OCD, you know, it wasn't like everyone just naturally obeyed or were quiet. There were components of mystery to several of my children that I just had to figure out and pray about and live through. And no formula is really applied. And so that's what I really love to tell people. Walk by faith. Love your children for who they are. Figure out your story because you have great freedom and authority to be yourself.
And I think that, I mean, the fact that we state very strong ideals, but I think that's because we fight really hard for them too. Because nothing good in this world comes without a battle.
Yeah.
And if there's a good relationship, then there's been a lot of forgiveness. And if there's a clean house, then there's been a lot of cleaning. And, you know, if there's something beautiful, a lot has been given to make it so. And I think that that's just something, we're a high stakes family, both in personality and in opinion, and we're just intense. Mm-hmm. But I think that part of the intensity that we've chosen is the intensity of faithfulness and the intensity of love. And that as much as we all battle in our own arenas and occasionally with each other, that we fight towards love and we fight towards creation and we fight towards togetherness. And I think that's the underlying truth of our home, is that deep commitment to continually push forward in love.
And I think, too, I just have to add that we are opinionated about this, aren't we, Mackenzie?
I love it.
but I think that one of the most profound, important foundations to lay is a foundation of the unconditional love of God, mm-hmm. so that we know that when there is conflict, we will always land in the place of we are committed to loving each other. We will work this out. There will be peace here. You are safe here. You don't have to perform mm-hmm. here. And that, you know, when there is love and grace and freedom in a home for people to be who God made them, then they always have a safe place to come home to. Mm-hmm. And the world is a place of critics. And in our arena, we have great friends, both in our ministry and in our books and all that. But we also have people who love to tear down our ideals. So mm-hmm. whenever the kids go out and they come home, we can just breathe and fall apart and laugh and giggle and do what we do in a safe place where no one gets to see.
That's so freeing. That's, yeah, what an amazing way to look at building a home as this safe harbor. Mm-hmm. I love that idea. So from practicality, you guys now, especially Sarah, you've said twice something about cleaning. So from the practical standpoint of moms who are going, I can just hardly keep the laundry done. How am I supposed to like create this life-giving home? Was that a struggle for you? Like, how did you balance that out, or how do you balance that out?
I think that one of the first things that's just been present in our home, I mean, I think being all idealists, none of us love the processes of house cleaning. None of us are particularly have that.
And there's always a bunch of coffee cups and mugs every
lots
day.
Lots of dishes, lots of dirty rooms. I think rhythms were something that were implemented early in our home that were just really important. I mean, and you can call rhythms whatever you want, chore lists or, you know, daily routines, whatever. But it's the idea of there's an underlying structure by which, you know, things don't get out of control. So we know when we're going to clean up the rooms. We know you can read right now or do whatever you want to creatively. And then at 5 o'clock, we will meet and we will sweep through the house and it will look nice before we spend the evening. Or, you know, rhythms in so many areas, whether that's a quiet time in the morning with, you know, prayer and scripture, or, you know, the rhythm of who cleans up after each meal. But I think it's just hugely important to structure life around these expectations so you know what's coming. We as children knew what was coming and kind of early on got into the habits of whether it was reading or cleaning or just the knowledge that this was part of life, that this is part of the rhythm of life and that it's something you keep up. And you know, sometimes you get off of rhythm and then you have a few days off and you get back on. But it's the creating those underlying structures that are expected, that are habitual, that make life possible, make the music of life possible, if you will. Mm-hmm. You have an underlying rhythm that then allows you to dance and sing and enjoy other things around it.
And I think that it's real important for women to know that it's constant. Mm-hmm. You know, unless you're just going to fast the rest of your life, yeah, there will never be a meal after which you clean it, that there's not going to be another mess. Mm-hmm. And I think it was really hard for me and still is sometimes, but God grew my muscle. I even remember a few years ago, I was getting ready to go on a trip to speak in Canada. And I had taken this particular speaking engagement because I really wanted to have a way to take the kids back to Prince Edward Island. Mm-hmm. And this was going to pay for us to go there. And then it ended up that no one could go. And because they were all in their adult worlds. And I remember before I got on the plane, there was a pile of dishes in the sink. And the kid found me crying over a pile of dishes in the sink. Before I was going to fly to Prince Edward Island, I was kind of like, it's never over.
We were all adults home, and I will not deny that there have been discussions over whose turn it was to do the dishes in the past 2 days.
But I think that it's never easy, but it is a lot easier now because we have all done it for so many years. We can all jump in there in 5 minutes and get it done when we just attack it. And, you know, mm-hmm. but just because something feels hard doesn't mean it's not right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think part of the rhythm, too, that you build in is a time when you know you can rest. I think that's hugely important, that there's, you know, when you're going to work, and that means you then know when you have off, and that there's times of you just let go and enjoy. And I think that's a huge part of us keeping rhythms in all of our lives on our different levels. And then especially at home is we know when there are times to just relax, which mm-hmm. means that the times of work are brief and done, and you just do them and then you mm-hmm. get to go out and enjoy. I think that's part of it as well.
So for moms who are saying, well, sure, Sally, you've been doing this since, you know, birth, like since your daughter was born.
No.
Well, for those of us who are like coming later to the game, do you feel
sure?
And maybe you're feeling like it's too late. Like, how do you recommend, especially with our kids and stuff, getting those rhythms started? I mean, they're probably going to resist them, but what's the best way to get them started?
Well, I do think that all kids resist routine and chores. I mean, their whole life.
Yeah.
That's an illusion that if you're doing it right, they're not resisting. Because I think that we have laughed before that there are too many sinful, selfish, self-absorbed people in this household. And of course, all of us are sinful and selfish. And
yeah.
I even remember when the kids were little, when I just couldn't take any more fussing, I would throw them in the car, not literally throw them in the car, but I would put them in the car, put on a book on tape or some song or, you know, Salty or something, or whatever you have now. And I would take us on a drive through the mountains and end up at a place with hot chocolate or a park or something, because it just gave me a break and them a break. And I think that, it, you know, I kept wanting to have more children so I could do it right for at least one child. And I think that for moms to think they've done it all wrong, we all think that. And I added my ideals as I went along. I think that's why you have this long period of time. You know, you don't usually begin sending your children out in the world until they're 17 or 18. And you just keep one step forward, two steps back. And you make, I wrote a blog post today about simplifying. Every January, there's a lot that I have to get rid of, whether it's mm-hmm. guilt, mm-hmm. fear, failures, or even too much activity, too much stuff. And then I start again, and I make a plan every 6 months or so when my kids are little. What have we grown in? What are we not doing well? Mm-hmm. What isn't working? And I think it's real important to work according to your personality. Mm-hmm. But I do think all personalities need some structure and knowing what to expect. Because if every day is different in your life and you're just reacting to life, who did this mess? Who threw this away? And they don't have, you're not building over a period of years. You're responsible for your attitude. You're responsible for your mess. I cannot make you be godly, but I'm going to encourage you, teach you, instruct you. But these are the things you need to do. And some kids were better at it, and some kids were not as good at it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it took me years and years, and I'm 62 writing about ideals. Mm-hmm. But maybe I forget sometimes those struggles that we always had. You know, it's so important to understand that building home is something that happens if you develop ideals and work towards it. Mm-hmm. Because the wise woman builds her house brick mm-hmm. by brick, little by little. The foolish woman with her own hands tears it down. I don't know any mom who ever meant to tear her house down. I do know one, actually. She was a hairdresser and she hated her children, but she was really mean towards her children and said, I can't wait till they leave and I hate them. And she said these things. So there are women in the world who say that. But I know that many women that I've met didn't mean to have their kids have catastrophes in their lives or scars, but many women just didn't take the bull by the horns and mm-hmm. say, I'm going to do what I can because I believe that God has called me to do this. And I love this verse. You know, I love Proverbs anyway. Building a house it takes effort. But in Proverbs 24:3, it says, by wisdom, a house is built. Mm-hmm. By understanding how important it is, what's a legacy, what people need. And by knowledge, the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. And I think that happens over time. We get years and years to get better. Our kids are going to grow. Mm-hmm. They're just naturally on this process of maturing. And if we intervene in their little heads with scripture and ideals and ideas, when they grow up, they do practice the same thing within their own personality, in their own home.
Yeah. And I love what you're saying there because I think it kind of meets in the middle of where a lot of people in our culture are right now. It's like we've got this whole Pinterest thing going on where people feel like, oh, I need to make this picture perfect Pinterest life. But then on the other hand, people are like, no, shun Pinterest. That's ridiculous. No one can attain to that. So I'm not going to do anything. It feels like there's kind of people on both ends of the spectrum, but nobody's coming to the middle and saying like, no, you should be working hard. It may not look like Pinterest, but you should still be putting in the effort to be shaping a life. Like, that's worthwhile.
Well, I think, too, I don't mean to talk too much. Sarah can say this in a minute, but I believe that it was God's will. I believe that for me to be holy and set my life aside in as many idealistic ways as I could, to have a place where people could see the reality of Christ, was my spiritual service of worship to Him. Mm-hmm. It was never an issue of Pinterest mm-hmm. or nothing at all. It was an understanding that God is a creator and He made a garden for Adam and Eve, and He created sunrises and sunsets every day, and He threw the stars into place, and I am made in His image to bring beauty to, and this one talks about subduing. And so for me, even though it was a process and still is, I realize that it was a fulfilling process. The older I get, the more I realize it was very affirming to get to my 60th birthday and go, oh my goodness, thank you, God, that I understood, I had to work towards them, because it is an affirming and very validating work of life mm-hmm. to have worked and worked and worked and then see who my children have become. And so you have to, in order to have the energy to keep going, you have to keep walking with God and see mm-hmm. that it is His will for us to create beauty and goodness and art and music and love. in a culture that is fighting desperately against that.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind is the idea that you're living these ideals in a fallen world, mm-hmm. that this is the broken place. It's not having ideals because perfection is attainable. It's having ideals because they picture what we hope and what we desire and what, you know, I feel like home is one more outpost of the kingdom coming into this world. Mm-hmm. And we very much, I think, are acting like Christ or like God at the beginning of creation when he spoke into the darkness and called forth light. I mean, that the same spirit of God is indwelling us as we speak into, whether it's the darkness or the formlessness of things that need to be graded, relationships that are hard, days that seem really difficult. It's not that we can be perfect. It's that we go forward in the power of Christ to create something new. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, if you think it's something that there's a perfection you're somehow missing, I think that's coming at it from the wrong angle, because that's very hard. I often feel like the reason we fight so hard for these ideals is because of how hard life has been. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the response of home and family is kind of a defiance against darkness and discouragement. It's saying, no, I really believe that God is a God of beauty and order, and he's redeeming us and he's bringing this redemption, and we're going to live and picture that and who we are and how we create and how we live and the traditions we make.
And that's so much more inspiring when you think of putting in the work, if it's as an act of worship and it's trying to, you know, bring his kingdom to light in our lives. That's much more inspiring than just like, absolutely, I'm supposed to just be doing this Pinterest thing because that's what everybody's doing and I have to look good.
Well, I can't. I'll never live up to my own standards. Anyway.
Yeah.
I think peer pressure just makes you feel guilty. Mm-hmm. And God pressure gives you freedom and mm-hmm. grace to grow.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's a really amazing way of saying that. So your book is...
I think I'll write it down and read it.
You should. You should. We'll have show notes at the end.
Interviews, I always think, what did I say?
Yeah.
So, anyway, you can use it if you want.
Okay. So you guys' book is, you have like an introduction, but then it's broken down into the months of the year. So is that what you really intended going into this book, that you want women to take a full year to kind of create this process in their home?
You know, I, Sarah and I many years ago read this book together by Sarah Van Breathnick, and she just had ideas in each month, and it was so much fun to read it that probably gave us the inspiration for breaking it down into months. But what we really wanted is that women would read it at a sitting, a number of sittings, and have a group to discuss it with. But that from time to time, they would get to a January and it was cold and the house was a mess, and that they would be able to go and read the book again and again and go, this is what I can do in January. Or, oh, when the kids graduate, this is maybe an idea. I forgot about that. I can go back and look in the book. But the book is not a magical formula of you have to read the chapters only in that month, because as you know from seeing the book, mm-hmm. each chapter is filled with ideas you can use any time in the year. Mm-hmm. But we wanted there to be a seasonal sense that there's a rhythm and a life and ideas that you can use all year long. But maybe in summer you look at it differently, and so you can go back and read that part again.
And I think along with that, just structuring the book in such a way that whether you use an idea from November and March or whatever, it's not sticking to the months, but the idea that every single day and is something that can be filled and made beautiful, and just the idea of using time, of seeing time as something to be created and structured, and you know, but we certainly, you can, all the ideas are at different months and different places. We just,
what did Mackenzie, when you read it, did you think it was something that you should read, you know, like you read a normal book
to month, or?
Yeah.
I did feel like I want to devour the whole thing right now, but then I would mm-hmm. want to go back throughout the year and read each chapter with that month to kind of gradually make this happen in my house. Like I knew that if I just tried to take on the whole book and like, I'm going to do all of this now, that it would get overwhelming. And so I did like the way that the book was broken up, because it's like, okay, I've got a whole year to create, you know, the basis of this life-giving home.
Yeah. And I do think that, again, I am a kind of an out there artistic, musical, let's celebrate life sort of person. And mm-hmm. so I needed the freedom to do it my way. Mm-hmm. And someone else might be more of a regular, everyday, teen sort of person, maybe a more different personality. And I want women to know that they have such freedom. You know, if you love the color purple, then make your whole house purple. Yeah. Or if you like the color blue, or if you like Mexican food or Indian food or organic food or whatever, it's, you get to write your own story. And the funny thing is, your children long to have to be a part of a story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what my kids enjoyed, was that we had things that defined us, especially as Clarksons, mm-hmm. but they were by no means the only things that could define a family, but it gave them anchors to feel close to each other.
Mm-hmm. And it seems from watching you guys, and it's something my husband and I talk about often, that establishing that family culture and those traditions are the things that bring the kids back once they're grown and gone.
Yeah, like, I think so.
It's a sense of belonging. It's a sense mm-hmm. of history. I think we all long to belong to a people and a place. I think that's part of how God made us. Mm-hmm. And creating that strong culture of the home, that sense of I belong to this family and this tradition, it gives a real sense of identity. And that's something I've thought a lot about in studying children's literature and in heroism, because I think that heroism and the ability to be strong in times of darkness is very much about identity. It's about a sense of, this is who I am. This is who I've been trained to be. It's very much rooted in the way that people know and see you. Mm-hmm. And I think that home is very much about creating that identity, who we are, what we love, what we value. And I think that's what gives children, certainly gave me, a sense of being able to maintain my ideals and values as I went into the world.
Mm-hmm. I think all the kids at one point or the other said when they left home, they were so excited about life from, you know, the stories and the vision and so on, that they all said, you know, I love you a lot, but I'm probably never going to come home because I'm so excited to go and invest my life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a year or two later, all of them would say, oh, I need to come home. There's no place like home.
Yeah.
And because the world is a taxing place, but there was this family story that we had built, some things we didn't even know we were building, but that mm-hmm. gave them all a place to belong, traditions to be a part of, that gave them then energy to go back out. And I think that's what's happening a lot right now. They're all adults in very different places in the world, but we all gather at least 2 times a year and just really restore and refresh together.
That's so, yeah, that's an amazing way to think about it too, that when your kids come back, it's this home base that even sending them out in their adult lives to be able to refresh mm-hmm. from. So it's worthy doing it now when they're little, because it's a lifetime work.
Oh, absolutely.
So can you tell us a little bit about how the guide that you have that goes along with the book, how it's different, what it adds to it, and what people can kind of expect from it?
Well, I will say that my son Joel is actually one of the main writers of the guide. Sarah and Joel and I were actually in France together because Sarah was in Oxford and I had free points. And we got this great little place for $200 for the whole week. It was an apartment in France. And so we met there. And Joel had an interview overseas, so he met there. But he and I, while Sarah was working in Oxford, really through some of that, said, I love being a part of establishing our history, because he has some other interests in his life that he's pursuing, and they'll be interesting, but I'll let him tell his story. But we kind of went back through our traditions, blog posts, movies, books, ideas, and we wanted to have new stories for the planner, but we also wanted it to be a place with blank places in the book where you could write your ideas and where you could write down maybe movies that we hadn't put in there, or books or whatever. We're going to have a forum on my blog where women can add different ideas for each of the different areas that we put in the book. And so the life-giving home experience, you can use it in a small group, you can use it personally in your devotions, but we wanted it to be a way to say, okay, now you have all these ideas, how are you going to make them real? What is going to apply to your life? How are you going to make a plan for your year? And so the two books go hand in hand. We love small groups. We have a lot of mom heart groups all over the world, but we also wanted it to be something that women could just take. I feel like when I'm sitting by myself and reading and pondering scripture and pondering ideas, it's like the Lord has access to my brain to work in a supernatural way. And when I take that time to pull away and have my own journal or planner, that's when I really would know what I needed to do during that season. So it's kind of a tool to make real all that people read in the book.
That's so helpful, because I read a lot of your stuff, and I know that you don't like to give people a formula, but it's mm-hmm. so helpful to have that tool to kind of take the steps you've given, but make it all your own. So I am very excited about that.
Yeah, I hope it will be useful.
Oh, I'm sure it will be. Well, this has been a really amazing conversation. I wish that we could talk all day long. But in wrapping up, I did want to kind of jump over, and I don't know how familiar you are with my podcast, but I typically do some stock questions at the end of every podcast with every guest that are all the same. So would you guys be willing to answer those?
Of course, sure.
Okay. Some of these I'm like, oh, this is a given. I know completely what Sally's going to say. But okay. The first question is candles or essential oil diffuser?
Candles for sure for me.
Yeah.
I like the plain light. I like the light.
Yes.
I think that you can do whatever, but it just so happens that my husband is allergic to most smells. It actually sends him into arrhythmia. We've been to the hospital.
Oh my goodness.
So I know that I can use certain candles. They're very plain. You know, I can use one of three or four scents. So I'm limited because he's limited.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, I think whichever you want.
Okay. So these are just for you. No judgment on anybody. But
right. I love the light.
Yes. Yes. You can't beat that with candles. So do you guys like cloth napkins or paper?
Ooh, here you get into the areas of ideals versus practicality.
Right.
If I could have my own, you know, organized life, I love the idea of cloth napkins. Mm-hmm. But paper is what's generally used in real life, I have to say, even in Oxford. But I love being able to do that.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when I was trying hard to be green, I bought a bunch of different napkins, but it's just like socks to me. You wash them. When you go to take them out of the dryer, they don't have a match, or, you know, one is stained or whatever. So everything I get now is pretty practical. If I get cloth napkins, they're multicolored and variegated.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it takes 3 hours to dry anything in our dryer in Oxford. And so maybe if it was faster, I'd go for cloth napkins.
But idealistically, cloth, realistically, paper.
Okay.
And in Europe, a lot of times we don't even get napkins when we go to restaurants. So they conserve more.
That's interesting. How interesting. Okay. So city or country, which do you prefer?
Wow, that's really hard. I think because we have lived in so many large cities all over the world and we travel there, the stimulation of city life is actually fun to me as an adult. And it was also a fun place to put my kids in the strollers and take them on a walk to a coffee shop or a park. But as they, during the... I love nature. I love walking. I love quiet. And so we've lived in country before when the kids were little, and I certainly did love that. They ran around like crazy people on our land. Yeah. Our kids played a lot outdoors. I love things that are beautiful, and I prefer quiet now that I have so little in my life. But we kind of, there's parts of us that like both, don't you think?
I think for me, where I am, I've decided in the last 5 years that I'm a balance of both, because if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I think I would have said, take, I'll never return.
Right.
But I'm realizing, especially living in Oxford, which is, thank the Lord, just a small enough city that it's manageable on foot, and has good markets and green spaces, which I greatly enjoy.
We love that, yeah.
But I love being, I think just... because of where God's put me and called me, I love being where there are people and there's community, and just being where there is that pulse of you know, different people coming in and out, and that I can go to different places, library, a church, a cinema, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I for right now, that's where God's placed me. But I actually think it's really important to get into the quiet of nature at least once in a while. And for me, that's a place that I go to restore. So I hope that in maybe when I'm an old lady, I'll have a cottage by the sea. Like there's a children's book called Ms. Rumphius, and she had three dreams. Then when she was old, was to live in a cottage by the sea. So maybe someday.
Yeah.
I want several cottages in my old age. So if you all would hurry up and work hard and make money, then that would be possible.
There you go. That's what my husband tells our kids all the time. Like, come on, you guys got to get to building something. Okay. Mm-hmm. Next question. Do you prefer paper or digital?
Oh, paper for me.
Sarah is definitely a paper person. I like to save things. I used to start out my young life writing letters to people that I really loved, or cards to give them a memory. But I have to say that I am much quicker on digital, and I can reach a lot more people quickly. Mm-hmm. I do tend to like real things and try to preserve real things in my life to validate the importance of personal care. So I do both. I do paper and digital.
I definitely use both as well. But I've realized that I do value paper just in the sense of, I think that two reasons. One is I've realized that for myself as a writer, sometimes it's really good for my mind to move at the pace of my hand instead of a keyboard.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I find that I'm able to think things through a little bit more intricately when my fingers can't fly beyond my my thoughts. And it really helps me that rhythm. I'm a fairly regular journaler. I love to write and just to work things out. And I find that very helpful. And then I really am a great believer in letters. I think that I know it's not an everyday practical thing, but I have a dear friend that we have written letters to each other since we were 11 and 13.
Wow.
And we're now, she has a child, we're, you know, busy lives, I'm overseas, but we've kept that up. And we have probably over 600, 700 letters each of us. And that history and that shared story between us is just something very different than a collection of emails. Mm-hmm. You can recognize, I think there's something that comes across as handwritten. Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely an advocate for keeping and or reviving the art of the handwritten letter.
And I have to say, we left this out of the book, but I made for each of the kids when they were very small, it's just a lidded paper box that, you know, that had a lid on it. But we called it their treasure box. And I would write them notes and they would keep pictures and they would occasionally get in there in the bed and pull out all of their memories, their photographs, their letters, the cards that we'd given them at birthdays. And so it gave them a tangible, beautiful thing to look at in their little treasure box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about a, I don't know, what would you call that?
Just general book box size.
Yeah, it's 18 inches on one side And they got to paint them and put stickers on them. But I do believe in having tangible, real things to look at to remember life.
Yeah, I agree. There's definitely something about somebody's handwriting. Like if I see my mom or my grandma or my great grandmother's handwriting, it just has a very different memory associated with it than when it's digital. So
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, next question: shopping. Would you rather do it online or in a store?
You strike us both silent.
I actually like to do. I'm not a shopper. Like I'm pretty efficient in life. I'm driven.
Yeah.
And so I try to get all these things done at once. But I love to go pick out my own fruits, vegetables. I love to hold the candle I'm getting for someone or the print that I get. In general, I would rather do real life shopping and pick art pieces or go to Goodwill and pick out, you know, some little crystal glass for someone. I think I'm more of a personal shopper than an online, though I use digital when I need to.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would say pretty much the same. I like the experience. Yeah. I like the experience of knowing what I'm getting.
Okay. I think you guys are the first one so far on my podcast to answer that, which is refreshing.
Well, if you could see our house, it's a mishmash of many little treasures that we've collected from all over the world. And so they're real things to us. They're not digitally bought.
Yeah.
And living in England, there's just amazing finds in charity shops. You have to go do it yourself. It's a treasure hunt.
Oh, I'm sure. That would be incredible. Okay.
You too.
So it's 4:00. You're making dinner and you need a mental break. So do you listen to a podcast or do you listen to music?
Music.
Same. Yeah.
Okay.
I think because I'm always thinking or reading, music is a definite break for my mind.
You know, I think in maybe my earlier years, when I needed guidance or longed for it, I would probably have made podcasts a part of my life, but it wasn't. And we had a habit every day in our lives of about 3:00, everybody in the whole house stopped and would have a cup of tea, hot chocolate, coffee, whatever it was, in a quiet place, put on music, look at a magazine for 15 minutes. Everybody did it.
Mm-hmm.
And it became a great habit for my introverts and extroverts. So when you say that, that's what I think, that we just had this habit of regrouping and restoring and breathing and having a little sweet or a little something to drink. And then we moved on to life. So that was what we just always did.
That sounds amazing. And I will be starting that this afternoon. Okay. Chocolate, milk or dark?
Okay, I'm dark, but not too dark. And it's sea salt with almonds.
Okay.
I've been morphing a bit in this. Dark is always my go-to, usually with nuts of some sort. But a really good milk chocolate I like once in a while, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But dark is my default.
Yes.
But I don't like the 80%. I like the more like 50 to 60%.
Okay. It's in my dark.
A little bit of sugar and butter.
Yes. Okay. Sports or no sports?
It depends on what you define as sports.
Yeah, that's really true.
Not reading or singing or musical theater. Actual sports.
You know, if anybody really knew us, we are intrepid walkers. I mean, we have gone on hikes and walks, you know, 12 to 15 miles. We love the challenge. We, our boys play basketball.
Used to play tennis.
We are a tennis family. But when kids have a choice of, okay, we're going to stop this year and not do national conferences and stay home so you can play soccer or basketball or whatever, they always chose to do the traveling and going with us places and famous road trips rather than the organized sports. We have done organized sports, but when you have four kids in organized sports, it about kills you.
Yeah.
And so we do love outdoors things. I was a competitive swimmer all my years of young years. But I don't think people would probably define us as a sports family.
Well, I just felt really happy when I went to England and someone asked, you know, they said that you had to put something, some sport or physical accomplishment you had done down on one of these applications. And one of the options was hill walking. And
I've got that
was my sport.
That's hilarious. Okay. We're pretty good Colorado people.
Yes, sounds like it. Okay, Periscope. Would you rather broadcast or watch?
Well, it's different for both of us. Ask Sarah first.
Well, I think this would mean I have to admit that I have never used Periscope.
I kind of thought that might be the case.
I would probably watch.
Okay. Yeah.
I would probably do it. I mean, I love speaking. I love teaching. I love all of that. So I like to watch my friends too. When I have time, but I have so little time that I'm thinking in the shower, the car, when I'm washing dishes about messages, because I just love to encourage women. It's what my ministry is right now. So I would do it.
Okay.
If I could do it as well as you did it.
Well, the few times you've done it, everyone has really enjoyed it. So keep it up.
Oh, you're so sweet. I just wish I could be you, Mackenzie, and have your brain, because I'm a little bit technologically deprived.
Well, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to help you, Sally. Okay, so we're almost to the last question, but what is your favorite movie? If you could pick any movie, what is your favorite?
Oh, man. That's so hard.
Yeah, if we had to really define ourselves by one movie, that would be hard because we are very much movie people.
I know. Somebody asked me, wait, what? There's not choices? Like, you can't narrow it down for me?
If I could do this.
Yeah, I don't think we could define one. I do tend to like English dramas and historical English dramas. I am a, I like stories. I like,
pick a random one.
You go first.
I go first, darn. can I just say like a favorite or two from this last year?
Sure.
So I really enjoy film. I have brothers who enjoy it. So we, and friends, we discuss it a lot. So I like many different things, this is a very off-the-wall one, but I really have liked in the last year. It's, I don't know if you've heard of The Secret of Kells and then The Song of the Sea. They're actually cartoons.
Oh, wow.
But they were done in this really beautiful artistic way. The first one was about the creation of the Book of Kells, which is this manuscript, medieval manuscript of the Gospels that was done with this. It was beautiful illumination and art, and it was lost for hundreds of years and then discovered in a swamp, and it was perfectly preserved. And the company that does these films, Song of the Sea and The Secret of Kells, are just, they're redemptive, beautiful stories about light and darkness and the creation of beauty. And I won't say much more. Very, very Irish in culture, and that's something I love, Celtic history and music. So
those sound really interesting.
I will say we love we love beautiful everything, especially since Nathan's a filmmaker and Joel is a composer. But I loved the new Jane Eyre. I loved the Wives and Daughters series. We like to watch the old Dickens series. And I wouldn't recommend these for children, but
I know Babette's Feast is an old favorite.
Yeah, Babette's Feast was a favorite many, many years ago. But things like what are some of the Dickens series?
We really just can't answer one.
Yeah, what are the Dickens series of our favorite ones that we used to
watch? David Copperfield, Bleak House.
Bleak House, and what's the one about the dead, you know, people in the ocean?
Our mutual friend.
I like epic stories that we can watch a little bit of every day. And of course, we watched a lot of historical films. We watched a lot of, unfortunately, they're not alive anymore, but we watched a lot of Winnie the Poohs with our kids when they were little. Winnie the Pooh movies and Winnie the Pooh cartoons. And but we just like epic stories, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, that answer will suffice. That's okay. Okay. Final question. Do you know what the term crunchy means, like natural?
Yes.
Okay. So if you were to put yourself on the crunchy spectrum of one being like not crunchy at all and 10 being, you know, legs unshaven, singing Kumbaya by the fire, where would you fall?
What would you say, Sarah?
I think I'd be a 7 towards crunchy.
I think that we are pretty crunchy, organic, natural.
Well, one was not crunchy and 10 was totally crunchy.
Oh, I thought one was crunchy.
No. 0 is 0, 1, like not crunchy at all. 10, totally crunchy.
I think I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think I would agree with Sarah. I'm not an extremist. I like to go to people's house and just enjoy what they've made for me. But at home, we're pretty organic, cook everything from scratch. We're idealists. Mm-hmm. we don't even have the ability do green stuff here in Colorado. We don't have any place in Monument where we can even take all of our bags of whatever it is. So we don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, we move towards ideals and also accept the fact that when we travel all over the world, most people that we visit don't do them. Hey. And we're not, wouldn't you say?
What?
Well, I mean, like when we would go to China or the Middle East or Europe,
different
we
ways.
Just, we are... We love people more than we love our crunchy ideals, but we do hold crunchy ideals a lot at home.
That is a great answer. It's very moderated, like not too extreme. Okay, well, do you guys want to wrap this up? Tell everybody where they can find you online.
Well, I blog most days, or at least 3 times a week, at sallyclarkson.com. And I would love to have people join me there. Most of the things that define me are Sally Clarkson at this point, due to my sweet friends who told me I needed to do that.
I blog at thoroughlyalive.com, which is also just sarahclarkson.com. And I blog very sporadically, but I do occasionally will be sharing stuff about the book as it comes out. So.
And the second part of me is we have a ministry at wholeheart.org. and momheart.org, and we develop different ministries for different people in different places.
And you also have your podcast.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. My podcast is for all enduring time, at least for now, At Home with Sally, because with the new book coming out, I wanted home in the title.
Sure.
But yeah, my podcast, thank you for that, is At Home with Sally.
Yes, and it is wonderful. If you guys have not listened to it, then you need to go back and just like binge listen to all of Sally's episodes because they're amazing.
You're so sweet. I'm so glad we had this time together.
Yes, thank you so much for meeting me, ladies. I'm so excited for women to get this book in their hands. And it is available now when this podcast is going live. So everybody run to Amazon and get it. We will have all the links in the show notes for you to be able to find. So thank you, Sally and Sarah.
Thank you so much. And we just love your heart. I know we'd be great next door neighbors.
Oh, I totally agree. Thank you. Well, I hope that all of you ladies have your hearts as full as mine is after that podcast, because I just love everything that Sarah and Sally had to share in this podcast, plus in their book. And if you guys want to have a chance to win their book, then you can head over to boldturquoise.com/11. And that is where we not only have our show notes for this episode, but we are also featuring a giveaway for the book and the guide. If you would like to try to get in on that, then make sure you head over, because it will only last for 1 week until next Thursday, February 11th, 2016. So you want to make sure you enter the giveaway or just go grab your copy from Amazon. We have got links in our show notes. And if you buy through those links, it's a great way to be helping support the podcast. But also, the Cultivating the Lovely community is going to be having a book club all throughout 2016, where we're going to be reading through each chapter every month and talking about how we can be implementing these things into our lives and cultivating more loveliness through this amazing book. So be sure you get your copy and help support the podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and for all of you you who've been leaving ratings and reviews in iTunes. I am so ever grateful. Every one of you who does that helps the podcast to get shared to even more people through iTunes, which I really appreciate. And it's just really fun seeing how the community is growing. So be sure to head over to the show notes, head to boldturquoise.com and see all the different ways that you can connect with us. And until next time, ladies, go be bold and gracious. Thank you.